Chapter 8. Doing Justice to Things. The continuing importance of the idea of a dialectic of enlightenment was suggested by a recent internet meme. Do you all remember before the internet that people thought the cause of stupidity was the lack of access to information? Yeah, it wasn't that. As crisis piles on crisis in the countries, particularly in the Western world, that most emphatically espoused neoliberal economic and social policies, people's attempts to make sense of what is happening are more and more prone to delusion, even as the availability of information that could counter delusion increases. This might be seen as evident, for example, in the growing incidence of baseless conspiracy theories and in the adoption of far-right politics based on racist scapegoating to account for systemic socioeconomic problems in a manner often reminiscent of the 1930s. Adorno's suspicion of information was already apparent in the 1931 Kierkegaard book, where he talks of the replacement of spontaneous thought by automatized conformity that occurs in connection with modern forms of information. The proliferation of information via the web often does not lead to a development of new ways of dealing with political and social problems, but rather to pathological adherence to pre-existing frameworks for understanding the world, and to a corresponding splintering into antagonistic groups. Projection, in which, as we discussed, the world becomes the impotent or omnipotent incarnation of what is projected onto it, is amplified by the way information is channeled via the web. People stay in the echo chambers that reflect their prejudices, which are reinforced by privately owned media concerns. Talk of stupidity here may seem inappropriate, but Adorno sees stupidity in terms of the systemic factors which destroy courage in thinking. Most stupidity in thinking forms where that courage, which is imminent in thought and continually stirs in it, was stifled. Stupidity is not the simple absence of the power of thought, but rather the scar of its mutilation. Adorno's work is an attempt to understand the mutilation of the power of thought by the systemic pressures of modern social forms, and to discover how the scar it leaves might be healed. What primarily obstructs such healing is the fact that the reproduction of stupidity, which previously took place unconsciously under the dictates of the bare necessity of life, is, because it could be abolished, taken in hand by triumphant mass culture. He often underestimates what may resist stupidity, but the pressure of mass culture has in certain respects actually grown in the years since his death. The increased flow of information does not lead to resistance to conformism, but often to a conformism that presents itself as resistance to conformism, which bolsters the status quo even more effectively. Clearly, just adding to the flow of information cannot counter what is at issue here, and Adorno does not claim to offer a general recipe for overcoming such systemic problems. There is, for him, no pre-existing theoretical map that will secure the direction of an investigation. This is why one has to be careful when seeking to translate his theories into contemporary practice. For all his engagement with political issues, Adorno is not an essentially political thinker who offers strategies for realizing the changes to which his ideas may point. Adorno's major contribution lies rather in his offering models for interpreting social and cultural phenomena, in which detailed empirical investigation is complemented by the revelation of the often hidden systemic roots of those phenomena. His use of resources from Marxism, psychoanalysis, and other perspectives suggests why he does not propose any kind of systematic method. The boundaries between psychological, philosophical, economic, political, aesthetic, and sociological explanation are perennially contested. Instead of focusing on possible skeptical consequences of this situation, Adorno uses the tensions between the forms of explanation to reveal what may be missing in each when investigating real-world cases. This is why he insists on unrestricted experience and on negative dialectics. Negative dialectics, as we discussed, does not seek to resolve the opposition between thought and its object philosophically, in the manner of Hegel. It is instead the consistent awareness of non-identity, of how concept and object never fully coincide, and does not preemptively adopt a standpoint. In consequence, and this helps explain the resistance Adorno's work encounters, particularly among philosophers, it can have the effect of inducing vertigo. For the great literature of modernity since Baudelaire, that feeling is central. Philosophy is anachronistically told it is not permitted to have anything to do with anything of the kind. The demand for a frame of reference in which everything finds its place contrasts with the idea that dialectic is the attempt to see the new in the old, instead of just the old in the new. Philosophy has to renounce any attempt at final systematic comprehension. Even the old is never fully comprehended. The alternative, which still is the norm in certain kinds of analytical philosophy today, is to aim at a definitive theory of what is being investigated. Adorno regards this as philosophy limiting itself to the methodology of the sciences, declaring these as philosophy, and virtually deleting itself. It is not that Adorno in any way questions the general validity of modern science. Certainly not the last among the overdue tasks of philosophy is, without amateurish analogies and syntheses, for mind to adopt the experiences of the natural sciences. But that is a socio-cultural task, which precisely eludes the methodology of the sciences themselves, and demands a different kind of stance that is open to other kinds of experience, including aesthetic experience. Adorno's Benjamin-influenced desire to establish philosophy's autonomy from scientific method means he does not see metaphysics as being concerned with what fundamental kinds of things there are and what properties and relations they have. The fact is that the sciences do a better job of this than armchair philosophers. Adorno's reflections on subject and object are, unlike a lot of modern philosophy, not concerned with skepticism about cognition, but rather with the distorted relationships of the subject to the world in modernity. The questions here are metaphysical, because they concern how we make sense after theological and systematic metaphysical forms of meaning have been emptied out by the advances of the sciences and by the Holocaust. Adorno, as we have discussed, associates the failures of previous forms of philosophy with the idea that modern humankind's relationship to the world has become primarily one of domination, which damages both human and non-human nature. At the same time, philosophy, as a form of mind/spirit, cannot simply be superseded. As little as mind is the absolute, is it absorbed by what there is. It will only recognize what there is if it does not abolish itself. The task is rather for philosophy to keep open the possibility of new ways of understanding and responding to a world that is prey to systemic delusion. This may sound rather vague, but what Adorno means becomes clearer if, rather than seeing the cognitive stance as the primary way we relate to the world, we also think in terms of doing justice to things, which suggests why art is so central to his thought. These contrasting stances are exemplified in the way that nature is that which is technologically dominated in the name of human self-preservation, but now also that which needs our protection. Adorno sums up his approach to non-identity as follows. Reciprocal criticism of universal and particular acts of identification which judge whether the concept does justice to what is grasped and whether the particular also fulfills its concept are the medium of thinking of the non-identity of particular and concept. This two-way critical approach is illustrated, for example, in ways of thinking about people which stereotype them, so not doing justice to their individuality, and, in contrast, in the ways in which individuals can take themselves to be self-determining subjects when they're actually objects of their externally imposed superego. The focus on the negative which runs through Adorno's work might seem to locate him as an existentialist thinker who sees humankind as faced with a meaningless universe. Such an interpretation would, though, ignore the thoroughgoing historicization upon which he insists. The world that can now appear meaningless is one which perpetuates deprivation and suffering and abuses non-human nature in ways that it is in the power of humankind to change. As such, despair is the last ideology, because it is actually historically and socially determined. The point is that appropriate social and political changes would also alter how the world manifests itself in philosophy. Negative dialectics, consequently, rejects both totalizing assertions of the meaningfulness of existence and totalizing assertions of its meaninglessness. What would, without ignominy, have a claim to the name of meaning resides in what is open, not enclosed within itself. The thesis that life has none is, as a positive thesis, just as foolish as its opposite is false. Traditional metaphysical assertions about the meaning of life can actually empty individual lives of meaning, because the assertions entail finality, when meaning can reside precisely in resistance to finality. Adorno speaks of truth, particularly in art, as having a temporal core. It may not be timeless, but that does not erase its role in making sense in particular historical circumstances. The task is, therefore, to keep open possibilities of new meaning, at the same time as coming to terms with the end of traditional metaphysics. Adorno regards art as essential to this. What is said by finite beings about transcendence is its semblance, shine, but, as Kant realized, a necessary semblance. That is why the salvaging, Rettung of semblance, the object of aesthetics, is incomparably relevant to metaphysics. What Adorno means is exemplified when he claims that Mahler's Song of the Earth, a piece of semblance, both acknowledges and transcends the realization brought about by the disenchantment of nature that the Earth is now one insignificant planet revolving around a minor star in one of billions of galaxies. The moment of rapture in the face of such beauty presumes to stand up against being beholden to disenchanted nature. That metaphysics is no longer possible becomes the last metaphysics. Announcing the end of metaphysics is itself metaphysical because it makes a universal claim. Art is, though, judgmentless, and this means that the apparent contradiction in the announcement is obviated by the fact that the last metaphysics is manifested in the form of Mahler's music, rather than in discursive form. The semblance of transcendence may be all that remains, but art in modernity can still play a vital role in keeping us open to things to which we might otherwise be blind. Even though redemptive theology and metaphysics disintegrate in the face of the Holocaust, Adorno's approach to modern culture takes seriously the needs which they represent, needs which, as the contemporary world continues to demonstrate, can lead to destructive, irrational responses. In a world where technological command has developed well beyond what was possible even in Adorno's day, but where, in many areas, this has not been accompanied by an equivalent moral advance, a warning from Education After Auschwitz suggests why his thought is unlikely to become redundant in the foreseeable future. Millions of innocent people, giving the figures, let alone haggling about them, is already inhumane, were systematically murdered. No living person can dismiss this as a surface phenomenon, as an aberration from the course of history, which would not come into consideration in relation to the great tendency of progress, of enlightenment, of supposedly advancing humanity. How to advance humanity, if we take seriously what it has been shown to be capable of, is the challenge which Adorno's work still poses for us today. This concludes Theodor Adorno by Andrew Bowie, narrated by Peter Noble. Copyright 2022 by Andrew Bowie. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Oxford University Press and was produced in the year 2022 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.